This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Not only do I feel out of the loop by not being here, by not having it be so immediate, consider I'm also 3 hours behind. When the workday begins in LA, it's already lunchtime here.
On any given day in Washington, D.C., policy proposals are created, debated, and decimated by tens of thousands of people and organizations working behind the scenes. Each week, a guest and I will visit one of D.C.'s many watering holes and distill the art of advocacy. We'll pull back the curtain a bit and take a look at how they play their part in this sausage factory we call our federal government. So if you're at all interested in how the sausage is made, pull up a chair, grab a drink, and join us for the next 20 minutes or so. After all, what goes better with sausage than a tall, cold one? Welcome to this episode of 80 Proof Politics. We're broadcasting today from the Washington Center of the LBJ School of Public Affairs from the University of Texas at Austin. Now, the Washington Center is aimed at two primary missions. Its cornerstone is a two-semester-long program for Masters of Public Affairs, Masters of Global Policy Studies students from UT Austin who began their career spending their first year in Austin and their last year in Washington immersed in an apprenticeship program, exposed to the Washington policy environment, and getting a head start on their colleagues who are entering the job market once they graduate. And we're here today because our guest, Bert, is a proud alum of the LBJ School of Public Affairs. In fact, has been extremely involved in the program through the National Alumni Board, the DC Alumni Board, and the Steering Committee for the Washington Center. She's also a poster child for the Washington program. You'll see her on many posters around town, on school bus stops, on school buses, and I'm thrilled to have her here today. So, Jen, cheers.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks for having me. That is a crazy introduction.
Jen is currently the Associate Vice President for Government Relations and Community Affairs at the University of California, Los Angeles, where she got her undergraduate degree and would probably tell you she's more Bruin than a Longhorn, but she wears the Longhorn hat proudly, and she's been so involved in the LBJ School of Public Affairs that we are proud to have her as one of our own. She recently started at UCLA after a long and storied career of government relations for higher education here in Washington. She's worked as a consultant. She's worked in Capitol Hill for now Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And she was in the University of California DC office before starting a long storied career with the Association of Public and Land Grant Universities as Vice President of Government Relations. Let me start at the back end of that. You're so well known as the voice and the face of higher education for APLU, but you've also been very engaged in the community of Washington. You've been an activist, you've been a volunteer, you've been engaged in so many activities that you really had become a mainstay of the Washington scene. So why, after such a long career and a great reputation, why did you decide to pick up stakes and move to Los Angeles to start this new career?
I have to say, it was not an easy decision to leave D.C. I had been here quite a while. I moved here for 2 years, 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. So 26 years, long time, more than half my life spent here, and I'd really built community, as you indicated, professional and personal community here. So it was not an easy decision to leave. But this was sort of an opportunity of a lifetime, working for my alma mater, going back to the beautiful UCLA campus, and and doing this work, government relations work, for you know, for an institution I really care for and love. I think UCLA was just the exact right institution. So I feel really lucky. Also, my family's out in California, so I've been really far away from my folks and my siblings for a long time. So this was just sort of the right reason at the right time.
Well, that makes all the sense in the world. Now, I've worked with a number of people over the years who have found the exit out of Washington, and when they've left to go back to their hometown or somewhere else where an opportunity has been waiting for them, but they consistently talk about being out of the loop as soon as they leave D.C. I mean, they're not getting the information flow that they're used to. They're not up to speed that they used to be on the topics and the issues of the day. Have you found that a challenge since you made the move?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. Not only do I feel out of the loop by not being here, by not having it be so immediate, so consider I'm also 3 hours behind. So you know, when the workday begins in LA, it's already lunchtime here, and so I'm always feeling like I'm catching up on the federal side. Personally, I don't mind arriving into the office a little early so we could, you know, have a morning conversation with folks here in DC, but it's it does make it a little bit more challenging on that front. And then just not having all my attention on what's happening here, what's happening on the Hill, what's happening with the administration, it definitely makes it difficult.
So what eats up the rest of your attention?
So state issues and local government issues and then the community issues that I'm really... And those are the fronts that I've not had any prior experience with. So I'm needing to jump into that and learn those people. As you know well, this job, no matter at what level of government, this job is about building relationships. And so getting to know the people who represent UCLA and the surrounding areas in the State House, as well as in City Hall and at our Board of Supervisors. Those are, you know, that takes a lot of time. It's a fantastic, super fun part of the job. I'm also learning about UCLA. So yes, I was a student there just a few years ago. And a lot has changed since I've been a student there. And also I certainly didn't know everything about the campus that is important to this work.
Sure.
When I was a student, so I'm learning a lot about, you know, what the leaders of our campus are interested in promoting to different levels of government, what our concerns are, what our strengths are, what we have to share. So it's all been fantastic, really, really fun, and completely exhausting.
But you've talked about the local government, the Board of Supervisors, the state government, but is it also the broader UCLA community?
So it is. It's the UCLA community and the Los Angeles community, right? So we're looking at not just our sort of neighborhood councils, because there are definitely issues that any university has to work through with your local neighborhood community. But you know, UCLA is kind of crazy to think about, but as a public institution in a top-notch public institution in a major metropolitan area, we're pretty unique in the country, and we're in a part of LA that tends to be a little wealthier than LA broadly.
So what part of LA is it in?
We're in a neighborhood called Westwood. And Westwood abuts Bel Air, Brentwood. It's not very far from Beverly Hills. So it's certainly a higher income area of Los Angeles.
And as opposed to your counterpart up a bit up the road, well, that doesn't necessarily reflect the student body, does it?
That's actually very correct. Right, right. So Bill's referring to our crosstown rivals, the University of Southern California, and USC is in traditionally, historically, certainly when I was in school, a much tougher neighborhood. Still pretty rough around the edges, but downtown LA is also seeing a bit of revival, I guess might be the word. Definitely gentrification. Sure. So that part of town is changing as well. UCLA being the major public university in the city of Los Angeles has a obligation and a need to really be involved in Los Angeles City and the greater Southland region. So that involves having us get engaged with K-12 institutions, working with other community foundations, with the local chambers of commerce, organizations that are involved not just in how the government works in the area, but how the city and the neighborhoods work throughout LA. And so that is very new to me. It's also probably the most exciting part of this job, because you're really interacting with people and helping the institution, UCLA, be engaged in making a difference in people's lives.
So is that a real opportunity, or do you notice sometimes that it's a challenge? I mean, I know you're new to this, but can it also be a challenge that people see UCLA, they see how gorgeous it is, they know what part of town you're in? Is there some sort of inherent friction with neighborhood councils, or was it more of an opportunity because they see the benefit?
There are definitely both challenges and opportunities to that community relations component. I think that overall, it's more of an opportunity than a challenge. There, part of it is also dispelling myths that people might have about the university. And, you know, people might have an idea about what this, you know, ivory tower institution does and who it serves. And part of our goal is to be out there and to talk about the fact that UCLA is 40% Pell Grant students. So Pell Grant students are students of particularly low income families. And we educate 35% of our undergraduates are first time, are the first in their family to go to college. So there's a lot that we want to do to serve our community, and a lot that we're doing well. We also recognize there's a lot more we can be doing. So that's part of what, you know, those are the challenges. What more can we do, and how do we do
that? So let's shift to the government relations part of your responsibilities. I mean, because that's your background, probably not as steep of a learning curve, but it's got to be a lot different. I mean, because you spent years up here working for a trade association as the face of the association before the Hill, the administration, regulatory agencies. And in that role, you had to gather all of this information from all of your members and somehow filter it down to a position and a message that members could generally agree upon. Now you're on the opposite side of the fence. You're only concerned about UCLA. Have you noticed that difference already?
It's definitely a difference. I mean, my responsibilities are very different than they were when I was with APLU. In some ways it's liberating, you know, working for one institution and having the opportunity to speak for that one institution and not have to worry about perhaps lowest common denominator of an association of, you know, 200 institutions. It also is, you know, it's a responsibility. It's a big responsibility to think about putting forward, this is where UCLA is, because we're now not in a, I'm now working for a very tangible organization, very tangible institution, rather than a more amorphous association.
Has to be different as well, because you were polling all the members at APLU. You were trying to come up with a message that had to be a response to some policy initiative. But it seems like working for a specific institution can be more proactive in a sense. I mean, when you're pushing more information out, trying to get a particular point or position somewhere before some decision maker. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, that's absolutely correct, Bill. So I think sort of instinctively, especially on the federal level, given that I've worked in that arena for so long, I know what UCLA's position will be. The broader message that our research university community has come to take and direct it to the members of Congress who represent the LA area, because, and I used to say this all the time when I was with APLU, nobody really cares what APLU has to say, but every member of Congress is going to care about what their local university has to say. We help provide the message to the members in the LA area. And that happens also on the state level.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Well, when you're thinking about getting that message out to members, and particularly those you have a constituent relationship with, and let's just focus on the federal side of this for a second.
Sure.
So, how do you deliver that message? What kind of tools are you using? What kind of product are you producing? How are you delivering UCLA's message in D.C.?
I should talk about our office structure a little bit. We've got folks, my team includes people who work only on federal issues. So two great legislative staff who are, and they've been there longer than I have, so they've already developed the relationships with the local, the LA congressional delegation. So typically what we do is reach out directly to the offices, to the LAs and the legislative directors.
Would that be the LAs from LA? Okay. Sorry.
That's good. Thanks, Bill. So we reach out to the LAs with the particular issue focus and the legislative directors and sometimes the chiefs and communicate our message. So we do that by email, with phone calls. When there's a real sort of pressing issue that requires contact with a member of Congress, we work to try to connect the chancellor with that member of Congress and make that link directly, leader to leader of the institutions. And that, you know, it doesn't happen that often, because oftentimes our messages are being really received well by our delegation. So when we are asking for members to vote in support of, I'll give you an example. We are looking at a big budget deal, hopefully coming down the road here in Washington, to increase the caps the budget caps that would then allow for more spending this fiscal year and next fiscal year. So what we're doing in that case is working with the chancellor on a letter that will go to everybody in our delegation, urging them to support the increase in caps. Now, of course, as you know well, not every member of Congress is really going to have much of a say in increasing the caps, because that deal has to come together at a very high level. We're lucky in the state of California. We've got two of the main House leaders. Speaker of the House is a Californian, and the minority leader is a Californian. And so we are lucky in that we can resonate with both of them as a major institution in their state. So what we'll do is not just reach out to our own local delegation, we'll reach out to the leadership as well, and of course to our senators, and then ask our local delegation to reach out to those leaders too and urge that deal. It's definitely, that's a big priority for us right now on the federal side. If we don't see, you know, for not just for us, of course, for all universities and frankly for a lot of other interests in town.
So you started this by pointing out everyone on the staff you reach out to. You can't overestimate the importance of reaching out to staff, can you?
Oh, absolutely not.
I mean, there's always an assumption from the outside that you, particularly if people come to town as a constituent or on a fly-in basis, that if they don't see the member of Congress, they've failed. Why is that a wrong proposition?
Bill, you really, you hit it on the head. So as, again, as you know well, staff make the offices run. Members of Congress certainly set the tone for their office, but no member of Congress has the ability to have 58 meetings a day and run the traps on every bill that they may be voting on. They rely on staff to communicate to them in abbreviated format what is important, how a bill is important to their constituents, how their constituents may view any kind of an issue, so that when they have the opportunity to vote on a bill in committee or on the floor, they have the pulse on what their constituents and the organizations in their district or near their district think about.
Well, and you saw that firsthand. You were in LA for the now speaker. But you, what about that time stands out the most in terms of the experience you gained that has led you down this path to where you are today?
So there were several experiences, and I only worked for then Congresswoman Pelosi, sort of everyday Congresswoman. But I will say she was never an everyday Congresswoman. That is the fact. But I only worked for her for a couple of years, and every day I was able to learn something. I will say that working in Washington, if someone is interested in having a career in Washington, especially in government affairs, working on Capitol Hill, even if it is only for a couple of years, is the best experience that you will have to then translate to your job as a lobbyist, as an advocate, because then you know what those staff are dealing with every single day, and it is a constant barrage. Every district has the same number of constituents, and every district has constituents who are very interested in making their viewpoints known to their member of Congress. So it is constant phone calls and now constant emails. Back when I was on the Hill, it was postcards and letters. And we communicated back to all those constituents what the Congresswoman's views were in response to their questions and their advocacy. So understanding the pressure that staff has on a daily basis, I think, is just important to then be able to reach out to them appropriately, not be too demanding, but to be demanding enough so that you can persistent enough, I should say, so that you can effectively convey your organization, my university's interests. So recognizing that each house member has just a handful of staff that cover all the issues that Congress deals with, which are multiple, yeah. multiple. These are really busy people, and you want to be respectful of their time. You know, without disrespect, these staff people often have to take meetings in the hallway of the congressional offices. You don't always get to sit in a nice fancy office and have your meeting. Sometimes you're standing by a windowsill and there are people walking by, and you can't be offended by that. You have to recognize that's the best this person can do right now, because all the other spaces in the office are being used.
When I was wet behind the ears, new lobbyist in town, I was charged with dealing with an office that wasn't too friendly to us because no one else wanted to do it, right? And there was one person in particular, who I'm not going to name because you know probably know her well, that you had to see on this topic. And I was warned going in that I would get immediate feedback on where I stood with her based on where the meeting took place. Oh, if it was by her desk, I was golden. If it was in the front office by the receptionist, she was warming to me. And if it was outside in the hallway, I still had a long road to go.
That's a great story.
But it's not that way. What you're saying is sometimes it's just the space, the time, the availability, and the crunch of activity where you just have to be prepared to deliver your message.
And quickly, because you don't know if that meeting will if you'll really get a full half hour for that meeting. Mostly, you need to be sure you get your message out in your first minute, and then you can expand on why your position is as it is.
The classic elevator speech approach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So was the LA job your first in town? You had spent 6 years in college. You come with a master's degree to DC. I assume you knew going to DC was a goal. Was a goal to be a legislative assistant, or did you have higher aspirations?
Oh, I definitely wanted to work on Capitol Hill. I didn't really know what the possibilities were. I knew that there was Capitol Hill, and there was the administration, and there were a lot of other organizations. And I did cast my net far and wide, and I just feel like I was the luckiest person in the world, because if I could have chosen who to work for, it would have been my hometown member of Congress. And how lucky was I that I got to do that?
So was it from there you went to the UC office?
Yes,
DC. How did that come about? Did they come and seek you because they had worked with you, or did you sniff it out?
After a couple years working on the Hill, and literally, as I mentioned earlier, when I came to DC, I thought I'll be here for 2 years, then I'll go back home to California and you know, take that experience and put it to good use in San Francisco or LA or somewhere in California, right? Save the world, right? Exactly. But after 2 years, I still hadn't had enough of D.C., and I thought, well, maybe I'll give it another couple years, another two or so years, but I want to see another aspect of how this city works. And so I was looking to work as an advocate, lobbyist, for another entity, and I was looking at a real variety of opportunities. And then the University of California job came to my attention, and I think I saw an ad in Roll Call, and I thought, wow, well, that would be something. I could work for an organization, you know, I could work for the UC system. I was a UC grad, and do that here. That keeps my connection to California, which is very important to me always. And it was a It was great. I didn't stay for 2 years. I stayed for 11 years at the UC office. So I ended up enjoying it quite a lot. And the bug, the DC bug, had bitten me really hard by then.
So you've had this story career. We mentioned many of your snops along the way. I've known you for a long time, Jennifer Poulakidas, and I did not know that you were a U.S. commerce aide in Athens, Greece. You have to tell us that.
Well, this I owe totally to my LBJ school experience. So that takes us back to the start of our conversation. So while at the LBJ School of Public Affairs, it's a 2-year master's program, and in between those 2 years, that summer, LBJ school students are required to do an internship. And the, you know, the opportunities were basically endless. We could work in Austin, we could work across the globe. And I've always had a real interest in international affairs. And I thought, well, you know, I could possibly be interested in working internationally. Let me spend my internship time and try to figure that out. There was a neat opportunity at the U.S. Embassy in Athens, Greece, working for the commercial counselor. And this guy was just a fantastic mentor. Turns out he's now teaches at Austin Community College. He retired from the Foreign Service and now's in Austin himself. And wow, what an experience this was, including that it taught me I did not want to do the Foreign Service. I saw what a toll it was on individuals and families and the constant moving around. And, well, that's exciting. I didn't see that being a way of life for me, at least. But it was a great experience.
Oh, it had to be. So, well, that's about all the time we have here on 80 Proof Politics. I want to thank you, Jen, for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest, Bert. And just remember, kids, no matter what you think about politics in D.C. these days, whether you think the glass is half full or half empty, there's still room to fill your drink. Cheers.
Cheers. What an honor. Thank you.
You did great.
We often hear about the individuals who took the oath of office to become the chief executive. But what about the other people who play a role in each administration, or the events that may not be as well known, but that contribute to the reshaping of the office of the American presidency? On the Presidencies of the United States, we explore each administration beyond just the person holding the highest elected office in order to better understand the history that brought us to the modern day presidency. I hope you'll join me on this journey through the annals of presidential history. Presidencies can be found anywhere fine podcasts can be found, and is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.